north of us, I say, and Shikat's men are probably crawling all over the foothills. They'll be looking for us.
Lya's face pales.
Then how do we get to Koth? If we take a ship from the south, the delay...
We go east, I say, into the tribal lands.
Before she protests, I kneel and draw a rough map of the mountains and their surrounds in the dirt. It's about 2 weeks to the tribal lands, a bit longer if we're delayed. In 3 weeks, the full gathering begins in Nur. Every tribe will be there, buying, selling, trading, arranging marriages, celebrating births. When it's over, more than 200 caravans will make their way out of the city, and each caravan is made up of hundreds of people.
Understanding dawns in Lya's eyes.
We leave with them.
I nod. Thousands of horses, wagons, and tribesmen head out at once. In case anyone does track us to Nur, they'll lose our trail. Some of those caravans will head north. We find one willing to shelter us. We hide among them and make our way to Koth before the winter snows. A tribal trader and his sister.
Sister?
She crosses her arms.
We look nothing alike.
Or wife, if you prefer. I raise an eyebrow at her, unable to resist. A blush rises in her cheeks and blooms down her neck. I wonder if it goes any lower. Stop, Elias.
How will we convince a tribe not to turn us in for the bounty?
I finger the wooden coin in my pocket, the favor owed me by a clever tribeswoman named Afia Aranur. Leave that to me.
Lya considers what I've said and finally nods her agreement. I stand and listen, feeling out the land around us. It's too dark to continue on. We need a place to camp for the night. We pick our way up the terraces and into the dark forest beyond until I find a good spot. A clearing beneath a rock overhang, bordered by old growth pines, their pitted trunks overgrown with moss. As I clear the rock and twigs from the dry earth beneath the overhang, I feel Lya's hand on my shoulder.
I need to tell you something, she says.
And when I look into her face, I lose my breath for a second.
When I went into the roost, she goes on, I was afraid that the poison would...
She shakes her head, and her words rush out.
I'm glad you're all right. And I know you're risking so much to do this for me. Thank you.
Lya, you kept me alive. You kept yourself alive. You're as brave as your mother. Don't ever let anyone tell you different.
Perhaps I'd follow the words by easing her toward me, running a finger along the golden line of her collarbone and up her long neck, gathering her hair into a knot and pulling her close slowly. So slowly. Pain lances through my arm. A reminder.
You destroy all those who get close to you.
I could hide the truth from Lya, finish the mission before my time is up and disappear. But the Resistance kept secrets from her. Her brother kept his work with Spiro from her. The identity of her parents' killer was hidden from her. Her life has been nothing but secrets. She deserves the truth.
You should sit down.
I pull away from her. I have to tell you something, too. She is quiet as I speak, as I lay bare what the Commandant has done, as I tell her about the waiting place and the soul catcher. When I finish, Lya's hands shake, and I can barely hear her voice.
You're going to die. No.
She wipes her face and takes a deep breath.
There must be something, some cure, some way.
There isn't.
I keep my voice matter of fact. I'm certain. I have a few months, though. As many as 6, I hope.
I have never hated anyone the way I hate the Commandant. Never.
She bites her lip.
You said she let us go. Is this why? She wanted you to die slowly.
I think she wanted to guarantee my death, I say. But for now, I'm more useful to her alive than dead. No idea why.
Elias.
Lyra huddles into her cloak. After considering for a moment, I move closer to her, and we lean into each other's warmth.
I can't ask you to spend the last few months of your life on a mad dash to Koff prison. You should find your tribal family.
You hurt people,
the soul catcher said. So many people. The men who died in the third trial either by my hand or because of my orders. Helene left Marcus's predations. Grandfather, fleeing from his home and into exile because of me. Even Lyra, forced to face the butchering block in the fourth trial. I can't help the people I've hurt, I say. I can't change what I did to them. I lean toward her. I need her to understand that I mean every word of what I say.
Your brother is the only scholar on this continent who knows how to make Serik steel. I don't know if Spiro Telumon will meet Darin in the Free Lands. I don't even know if Telumon is alive. But I do know that if I can get Darin out of prison, if saving his life means that he can give the Empire's foes a chance to fight for their freedom, then perhaps I'll make up for some of the evil I've brought into the world. His life, and all the lives he could save, to make up for those that I've taken.
What if he's dead, Elias?
You said you heard men in the Roost talking about him, about his connection to Telumon.
She tells me again what they said, and I consider.
The marshals will need to make sure Darin hasn't shared his blacksmithing knowledge, and that if he has, that knowledge doesn't spread. They'll keep him alive for questioning.
Though I don't know if he'll survive the interrogations, especially when I consider the Warden of Koff and the twisted ways he gets answers out of his prisoners. Lyra turns her face to mine.
How sure are you?
If I wasn't sure, but you knew there was a chance, the slightest chance, that he still lived, would you try to save him? I see the answer in her eyes.
It doesn't matter if I'm sure, Lyra, I say. As long as you want to save him, then I will help you. I made a vow. I'm not going to break it.
I take Lyra's hands in mine. Cool, strong. I would keep them here, kiss every callus on her palms, nibble the inside of her wrist so she gasped. I would pull her closer and see if she too wished to give in to the fire that burns between us. But for what? So that she can grieve when I'm dead? It's wrong. It's selfish. I pull away from her slowly, holding her eyes as I do it, so she knows it's the last thing I want. Hurt washes across her eyes. Confusion. Acceptance. I am glad she understands. I can't get close to her. Not in that way. I can't let her get close to me. Doing so will only bring grief and pain. And she's had enough of that.
Chapter 11. Helene.
Leave her be, Nightbringer.
I feel a strong hand beneath my arm, forcing me away from the wall and upright. Cain? Pale wisps of hair snake out of the augur's hood. His wasted features are shadowed by his black robes, and his blood-red eyes are grave as he regards the creature. Nightbringer, he called it. Like the old stories Mamie Reeler used to tell. The Nightbringer hisses softly, and Cain's eyes narrow.
Leave her, I say.
The Augur steps in front of me.
She does not walk in the darkness. Doesn't she?
The Nightbringer chuckles before disappearing in a whirl of his cloak, leaving the scent of fire trailing. Cain turns to me.
Well met, Bloodshrike.
Well met? Well met?
Come, we do not wish for the Commandant or her lackeys to overhear us.
My body still shakes from what I saw in the Nightbringer's eyes. As Cain and I leave Villa Vituria, I get hold of myself. The second we clear the gates, I wheel on the Augur. Only a lifetime of veneration keeps me from grabbing desperately at his robes. You promised! The Augur knows my every thought, so I don't hide the crack in my voice or fight the tears in my eyes. It is a relief not to, in a way. You swore he would be all right if I kept my vow!
No, Bloodshrike.
Cain leads me away from the villa and down a wide avenue of illustrian homes. We approach one that must have once been beautiful, but is now a burned-out shell, destroyed days ago during the worst of the Scholar Revolution. Cain wanders into the smoking debris.
We promise that if you held the oath, Elias would survive the trials. And he did.
What was the point of him surviving the trials if he's just going to die a few weeks from now by my hand anyway? I can't refuse Marcus's order, Cain. I swore fealty. You made me swear fealty.
Do you know who lived in this house? Aline Aquila.
Changing the subject, of course. No wonder Elias was always so irritated by the Augurs. I force myself to look around. The house is unfamiliar.
Mask Laurent Marianus. His wife, Aina.
Cain nudges aside a charred beam with his foot, and picks up a roughly carved wooden horse.
Their children, Lucia, Amara, and Darian. Six scholar slaves. One of those was Siard. He loved Darian like a son.
Cain turns the horse over and gently sets it back down.
Siard carved this for the boy 2 months ago, when Darian turned 4.
My chest tightens. What happened to him?
5 of the slaves tried to flee when the scholars attacked with torches and pitch. Siard ran for Darian. He found him, holding his horse, hiding beneath his bed in terror. He pulled him out, but the fire was too swift. They died quickly, all of them. Even the slaves who tried to run.
Why are you telling me this?
Because the Empire is filled with homes like this, with lives like these. Do you think that Darian's or Siard's lives matter less somehow than Elias's? They do not.
I know that, Cain. I feel chagrined that he would need to remind me of the value of my own people. But what was the point of everything I did in the first trial if Elias is just going to die anyway? Cain turns the full force of his presence upon me. I shrink back.
You will hunt Elias. You will find him. For what you learn on that journey about yourself, your land, your enemies, that knowledge is essential to the Empire's survival. And to your destiny.
I feel like retching at his feet. I trusted you. I believed you. I did what you wanted. And now my fears will come to life for my trouble. Hunting Elias, killing him, that's not even the worst part of the nightmares. It's the feeling inside as I do it. That's what makes the dreams so potent. The emotions that roll through me. Satisfaction as I torment my friend, pleasure at the laughter of Marcus, who stands beside me, looking on in approval.
Do not let despair take you.
Cain's voice softens.
Hold true to your heart, and the Empire will be well served.
The Empire. Always the Empire. What about Elias? What about me?
Elias's fate is in his own hands. Come now, Bloodshrike.
Cain lifts a hand to my head, as if offering a blessing.
This is what it means to have faith, to believe in something greater than yourself.
A sigh escapes me, and I wipe the tears from my face. This is what it means to believe. I wish it weren't so hard. I watch as he drifts away from me, deeper into the ruins of the house, finally disappearing behind a scorched pillar. I don't bother following. I already know he's gone. The Black Guard Barracks stands in a Makeda section of the city. It is a long stone building with no markings but a silver, open-winged shrike embossed on the door. The second I enter, the half-dozen masks within stop what they are doing and salute. You! I look to the closest blackguard. Go and find Lieutenant Faris Candlon and Lieutenant Dex Atreus. When they arrive, assign them quarters and arms. Before the guard can even acknowledge, I move on to the next. You! I say. Get me every report from the night that Veturius escaped. Every attack, every explosion, every dead soldier, every looted store, every eyewitness account, all of it. Where are Shrike's quarters?
Through there, sir.
The soldier points at a black door at the end of the room. Lieutenant Avitas Harper is within. He arrived just before you. Avitas Harper. Lieutenant Harper. A chill rolls across my skin. My torturer. Of course. He too is a member of the Black Guard. What in the bleeding skies does he want? The Black Guard looks surprised for a moment.
Orders, I believe. The Emperor assigned him to your task force.
You mean the Commandant assigned him. Harper is her spy. Harper waits at my desk in Commander's quarters. He salutes with unsettling blankness, as if he didn't just spend 5 days in a dungeon tormenting me. Harper? I sit down opposite him, the desk between us. Report? Harper says nothing for a moment. I sigh in open irritation. You've been assigned to this detail, yes? Tell me what we know about the whereabouts of the traitor Veturius, Lieutenant. I put as much disdain in the word as possible. Or are you as ineffective a hunter as you are an interrogator? Harper doesn't react to the jibe.
We have one lead, a dead mask, just beyond the city.
He pauses.
Bloodshrike, have you chosen your force for this mission?
You and two others, I say. Lieutenant Dex Atreus and Lieutenant Faris Candlon. They'll be inducted into the Black Guard today. We'll call in backup as needed.
I do not recognize the names. Generally, Shrike, inductees are chosen by...
Harper! I lean forward. He will not have control over me. Never again. I know you're the Commandant's spy. The Emperor told me. I can't get rid of you, but that doesn't mean I have to listen to you. As your commander, I order you to shut up about Faris and Dex. Now, take me through what we know of Veturius's escape. I expect a retort. Instead I get a shrug, which is somehow more infuriating. Harper details Elias's escape, the soldiers he killed, sightings of him in the city. A knock comes at the door mid-report, and to my relief, Dex and Faris enter. Faris's blonde hair is a mess, and Dex's dark skin is ashen. Their singed capes and bloodied armor are evidence of their activities the past few days. Their eyes widen when they see me. Cut, bruised, a mess. But then Dex steps forward.
Bloodshrike.
He salutes, and despite myself I smile. Trust Dex to remember protocol, even when faced with the shattered remnants of an old friend.
10 hells, Aquila! Faris is aghast. What did they do to you?
Welcome, lieutenants, I say. I assume the messenger told you of the mission.
You're to kill Elias, Ferris says. Hel, are you prepared to serve?
Of course, Ferris goes on. You need men you can trust, but Hel,
this... I speak over him, lest he say something that Harper can report back to the Emperor and the Commandant. Is Lieutenant Arvatus Harper, my torturer and the Commandant's spy? Immediately, Ferris clamps his mouth shut. Harper is also assigned to this mission, so beware of what you say around him, as it will all be reported back to the Commandant and Emperor. Harper shifts uncomfortably, and a bolt of triumph shoots through me. Dex, I say. One of the men is bringing in the reports from the night Elias escaped. You were his lieutenant. Look for anything that might be relevant. Ferris, you're with me. Harper and I have a lead outside the city. I am thankful that my friends accept my orders stoically, that their training keeps their faces blank. Dex excuses himself, and Ferris follows to procure horses. Harper stands, his head tilted as he looks at me. I cannot read his expression. Curiosity, perhaps? He reaches into his pocket, and I tense, remembering the brass beaters he used on me during my interrogation. But he only pulls out a man's ring. Heavy, silver, and embossed with a bird, wings spread, beak wide in a scream. The Bloodshrike's ring of office. Yours now. He takes out a chain. In case it's too big. It is too big, but a jeweler can fix that. Perhaps he expects me to thank him. Instead, I take the ring, ignore the chain, and sweep past him. The dead mask in the dry flats beyond Sarah sounds like a promising start. No tracks, no ambush. But the moment I see the body, hanging from a tree and bearing clear signs of torture, I know Elias didn't kill him.
Veturius is a mask, Bloodshrike, trained by the Commandant, Harper says as we head back to the city. Is he not a butcher like the rest of us?
Veturius wouldn't leave a body out in the open, Ferris says. Whoever did this wanted the body found. Why do that if he doesn't want us on his trail?
To throw us off, Harper says. To send us west instead of south.
As they argue, I mull it over. I know the mask. He was one of four ordered to guard Elias at his execution. Lieutenant Cassius Pretorius, a vicious predator with a taste for young girls. He'd done a stint at Blackcliff, as a combat centurion. I was 14 then, but I kept one hand on a dagger when he was around. Marcus sent the other three masks guarding Elias to cough for 6 months as punishment for losing him. Why not Cassius? How did he end up like this? My mind leaps to the Commandant, but it doesn't make sense. If Cassius angered her, she'd torment and kill him publicly, all the more to build her reputation. I feel a prickling on my neck, as if I'm being watched.
Little singer.
The voice is distant, carried on the wind. I whirl in my saddle. The desert is empty, but for a tumbleweed rolling past. Ferris and Harper slow their horses, staring back at me quizzically. Walk on, Aquila. It was nothing. The next day of the hunt is equally useless, as is the one after that. Dex finds nothing in the reports. Runners and drum messages bring false leads. Two men killed in Narvium, and a witness swears Elias is the murderer. A marshal and a scholar reportedly checking into an inn, as if Elias would be fool enough to check in to a bleeding inn. By the end of the third day, I'm exhausted and frustrated. Marcus has sent two messages already, demanding to know if I've made any headway. I should sleep in the Blackguard barracks, as I have the past two nights. But I am sick of the barracks, and particularly sick of the feeling that Harper is reporting my every move back to Marcus and the Commandant. It's nearly midnight when I arrive at Villa Aquila, but the lights of the house blaze, and dozens of carriages line the road outside. I take the slaves' entrance in to avoid family, and run straight into Livy, who is supervising a late dinner. She sighs at my expression.
Go in through your window. The uncles have taken over the bottom floor. They'll want to speak with you.
The uncles, my father's brothers and cousins, lead the main families of Gens Aquila. Good men, but long-winded.
Where's mother? With the aunts, trying to keep a rein on their hysteria.
Livy raises an eyebrow. They're not happy about the Aquila-Ferrara alliance. Father asked me to serve dinner. So she can listen and learn, no doubt. Livia, unlike Hannah, has an interest in the running of the gens. Father is no fool. He knows what an asset that can be. As I leave through the back door, Livy calls,
"Watch out for Hannah. She's acting strange. Smug. Like she knows something we don't."
I roll my eyes, as if Hannah could possibly know anything I would care about. I leap into the trees that curl toward my window. Sneaking in and out, even injured, is nothing. I used to do it regularly, during leave to meet Elias, though never for the reason I wanted. As I swing into my room, I berate myself. He's not Elias. He's the traitor Veturius, and you have to hunt him. Maybe if I keep saying the words, they'll stop hurting.
Little singer.
My entire body goes numb at the voice, the same one I heard in the desert. That moment of shock is my undoing. A hand clamps over my mouth, and a whisper sounds in my ear.
I have a story to tell. Listen carefully. You might learn something worthwhile.
Female. Strong hands. Badly calloused. No accent. I move to throw her off, but the steel held steady against my throat stops me. I think of the body of the mask out in the desert. Whoever this is, she's deadly, and she's not afraid to kill me.
Once upon a time,
the strange voice says,
a girl and a boy tried to escape a city of flame and terror. In this city they found salvation half touched by a shadow. And there waited a silver-skinned she-demon with a heart as black as her home. They fought the demon beneath a sleepless spire of suffering. They brought the demon low and escaped victorious. A pretty tale, is it not?
My captor puts her face close to my ear.
The story is in the city, little singer,
she says.
Find the story, and you'll find Elias Veturius.
The hand over my mouth drops away, as does the blade. I turn to see the figure darting across my room.
Wait!
I turn and put my hands in the air. The figure halts. The dead mask in the desert, I say. You did that?
A message for you, little singer,
the woman rasps.
So you wouldn't be stupid enough to fight me. Don't feel badly about it. He was a murderer and a rapist. He deserved to die. Which reminds me.
She tilts her head.
The girl, liar. Don't touch her. If any harm comes to her, no force in this land will stop me from gutting you. Slowly.
With that, she is moving again. I leap up and unsheathe my blade. Too late. The woman is through the open window and scuttling away across the rooftops. But not before I catch sight of her face, hardened by hatred, mangled beyond belief, and instantly recognizable. The Commandant's slave, the one who is supposed to be dead, the one everyone called Cook.
Chapter 12. Liar. When Elias wakes me the morning after leaving the roost, my hands are wet. Even in the pre-dawn gloom, I see the tribesmen's blood running down my arms. Elias, I frantically wipe my palms on my cloak. The blood! It won't come off! It's all over him, too. You're covered!
Liar!
He is by my side in an instant.
It's just the mist.
No, it's everywhere.
Death. Everywhere.
Elias takes my hands in his own, holding them up to the dim starlight.
Look, the mist beads on the skin.
Reality finally takes hold as he pulls me slowly to my feet. Just a nightmare.
We need to move.
He nods to the rock field, barely visible through the trees 100 yards away.
There's someone out there.
I don't see anything out in the juts, nor do I hear anything beyond the creaking of branches in the wind and the chirping of early rising birds. Still, my body aches with tension. Soldiers? I whisper to Elias.
He shakes his head. Not sure. I saw a flash of metal, armor, or perhaps a weapon. It's definitely someone following us.
At my unease, he offers a quick smile.
Don't look so worried. Most successful missions are just a series of barely averted disasters.
If I thought Elias's pace out of the roost was intense, I was mistaken. The Tellus has nearly restored him to his former strength. In minutes, we have left the rock field behind and are making our way through the mountains, as if the Nightbringer himself is on our heels. The terrain is treacherous, pocked with overflowing gulches and streams. Soon enough, I find that it takes all of my concentration just to keep up with Elias, which isn't a bad thing. After what happened with Shekat, after learning what the Commandant did to Elias, I want nothing more than to push my memories into a dark closet in my mind. Over and over again, Elias eyes the trail at our backs. Either we lost them, he says, or they're being very clever about keeping themselves hidden. I'm thinking the latter. Elias says little else, his attempt, I assume, to keep his distance, to protect me. Part of me understands his reasoning, respects it even, but at the same time I feel the loss of his company keenly. We escaped Sarah together. We fought the wraiths together. I cared for him when he was poisoned. Pop used to say that standing by someone during their darkest times creates a bond, a sense of obligation that is less a weight and more a gift. I feel tied to Elias now. I do not want him to shut me out. Midway through the second day, the skies open up and we are deluged. The mountain air turns cold and our pace slows until I want to scream. Every second seems like an eternity I must spend with thoughts I want desperately to suppress. The Commandant poisoning Elias. Shekat dying. Darin in Koth, suffering at the hands of the prison's infamous warden. Death. Everywhere. A forced march in bone-nubbing sleet simplifies life. After 3 weeks, my world has narrowed to sucking in the next breath, forcing myself to take the next step, finding the will to do it again. At nightfall, Elias and I collapse in exhaustion, soaked and shivering. In the morning, we shake the frost off our cloaks and begin again. We push harder now, trying to make up time. When we finally wind down from the higher elevations, the rain lets up. A chilly mist descends over the trees, sticky as cobwebbing. My pants are torn at the knees, my tunic shredded. Strange, Elias mutters. Never seen weather like this so close to the tribal lands. Our pace eases to a crawl, and when sunset is still an hour away, he slows.
There's no use going on in this muck, he says. We should reach Nur tomorrow. Let's find a place to camp.
No, stopping will give me time to think, to remember. It's not even dark yet, I say. What about whoever is following us? Surely we can... Elias gives me a level look. We're stopping, he says. I haven't seen any sign of our tail in days. The rain's finally gone. We need rest and a hot meal. Minutes later, he spots a rise. I can just make out a cluster of monolithic boulders atop it. At Elias's request, I start a fire while he disappears behind one of the boulders. He is gone for a long time, and when he returns, he's clean-shaven. He's scrubbed off the dirt of the mountains and changed into clean clothes. Are you sure this is a good idea? I've nursed the fire to a respectable little flame, but I peer into the woods, nervously. If our tail is still out there, if they see the smoke.
The fog masks the smoke.
He nods to one of the boulders and gives me a quick once-over.
There's a spring there. You should clean up. I'll find dinner.
My face heats. I know how I must look. Ripped fatigues, covered in mud up to my knees, scratches on my face, and wild, uncouth hair. Everything I own smells of sodden leaves and dirt. At the spring, I strip away my shredded, disgusting tunic, using the one clean corner to scrub myself off. I find a patch of dried blood. Shikats. Swiftly, I cast the tunic away.
Don't think about it, Lyra.
I peer behind me, but Elias is gone. The part of me that can't forget the strength of his arms and the heat of his eyes during the dance at the Moon Festival wishes he had stayed. Looked. Offered the comfort of his touch. It would be a welcome distraction to feel the warmth of his hands on my skin, in my hair. It would be a gift. An hour later, I'm scrubbed raw and dressed in clean, if damp, clothes. My mouth waters at the smell of roasting rabbit. I expect Elias to get up the second I appear. If we're not walking or eating, he leaves on patrol. But today, he nods at me, and I settle in beside him, as close to the fire as possible, and comb the snarls from my hair. He points to my armlet. It's beautiful. My mother gave it to me, just before she died.
The pattern. I feel like I've seen it before.
Elias tilts his head.
May I?
I reach up to take off the armlet, but stop. A peculiar reluctance coming over me. Don't be ridiculous, Lyra. He's going to give it right back.
Just for a minute, all right?
I hand the armlet over, edgy as he turns it in his hands, examining the pattern barely visible beneath the tarnish.
Silver, he says. Do you think the Fae could sense it? The Ifrit and the Wraiths kept asking for silver.
No idea. I take it quickly when he hands it back, my whole body relaxing as I put it on. But I'd die before I gave this up. It was the last thing my mother gave me. Do you have anything of your father's?
Nothing. Elias doesn't sound bitter. Not even a name. Just as well, whoever he was. I don't think he was a good person.
Why?
You're good. And you didn't get it from the Commandant.
Elias's smile is sad.
Just a hunch.
He pokes the fire with a stick.
Lyra, he says gently. We should talk about it.
Oh, skies. Talk about what?
Whatever it is that's bothering you. I can take a guess, but it might be better if you tell me.
You want to talk now, after weeks of not even looking at me?
I look at you. His response is swift, his voice low, even when I shouldn't.
Then why wouldn't you say anything? Do you think I'm horrible for what happened with Shikart? I didn't want to. I choke back the rest of my words. Elias drops the stick and inches closer. I feel his fingers on my chin and make myself look at him.
Lyra. I am the last person who will judge you for killing in your own defense. Look at what I am. Look at my life. I left you alone because I thought you might find comfort in solitude. As for not looking at you, I don't want to hurt you. I'm dead in a few months. About 5 if I'm lucky. It's best if I keep my distance. We both know that.
So much death. I say. It's everywhere. What's the point, then, of living? Will I ever escape it? In a few months, you'll... I can't say the words. And Shikart. He was going to kill me. And then... Then he was dead. His blood was so warm. And he looked alive, but...
I suppress a shudder and straighten my back.
Never mind. I'm letting this get the best of me.
Your emotions make you human, Elias says. Even the unpleasant ones have a purpose. Don't lock them away. If you ignore them, they just get louder and angrier.
A lump rises in my throat, insistent and clawing, like a howl that's been trapped inside me. Elias pulls me into a hug, and as I lean into his shoulder, the sound lurking within emerges, something between a scream and a sob, something animal and strange. Frustration and fear at what is to come, rage at how I always feel as if I'm thwarted. Terror that I will never see my brother again. After a long time, I pull back. Elias's face is somber when I look up at him. He wipes my tears away. His scent rolls over me. I breathe it in. The open expression on his face fades. I can practically see him fling up a wall. He drops his arms and moves back. Why do you do that? I try to rein in my exasperation and fail. You close yourself up. You shut me out because you don't want me to get close. What about what I want? You won't hurt me, Elias.
I will, he says. Trust me.
I don't trust you. Not about this. Defiantly, I edge closer to him. He clenches his jaw but doesn't move. Without looking away, I bring a tentative hand to his mouth. Those lips curved like they're always smiling, even when his eyes are lit with desire, as they are now.
This is a bad idea, he murmurs.
We're so close that I can see a long eyelash that's landed on his cheek. I can see the hints of blue in his hair. Then why aren't you stopping it?
Because I'm a fool.
We breathe each other's breath, and as his body relaxes, as his hands finally slide around my back, I close my eyes. Then he freezes. My eyes snap open. Elias's attention is fixed on the tree line. A second later, he stands and draws his Sims in one fluid motion. I scramble to my feet.
Liar, he steps around me. Our tail has caught up. Hide in the boulders and...
His voice takes on a sudden note of command as he meets my eyes.
If anyone gets near you, fight with all you've got.
I draw my knife and dart behind him, trying to see what he sees, to hear what he hears. The forest around us is silent. Zing! An arrow flies through the trees straight at Elias's heart. He blocks it with a twitch of a Sim. Another missile hurtles out. Zing! And another. And another. Elias blocks them all, until a small forest of broken arrows sits at his feet.
I could do this all night, he says,
and I start, because his voice is devoid of emotion.
The voice of a mask. Let the girl go, someone snarls from the trees, and be on your way.
Elias glances over his shoulder at me, one eyebrow cocked.
A friend of yours?
I shake my head. I don't have any. A figure steps out of the trees, dressed in black, heavily hooded, an arrow nocked in his bow. In the heavy mist, I cannot make out his face, but something about him is familiar.
If you're here for the bounty, Elias begins, but the archer cuts him off. I'm not, he snaps. I'm here for her. Well, you can't have her, Elias says. You can keep wasting arrows, or we can fight.
Fast as a whip, Elias flips one of his Sims around and offers it to the man with such blatant and insulting arrogance that I grimace. If our attacker was angry before, he'll be furious now. The man drops his bow, staring at us for a second before shaking his head.
She was right, he says, his voice hollow. He didn't take you. You went willingly.
Oh, skies, I know him now. Of course I know him. He pushes his hood back, hair pouring out like flame. Keenan.
Chapter 13. Elias. While I attempt to work out how and why the redhead from the Moon Festival has tracked us all the way through the mountains, another figure trudges out from the woods, her blonde hair pulled back in a messy braid, face and eye patch smudged with dirt.
She was already slender when living with the Commandant, but now she looks like she's on the edge of starvation.
Is he? Elias!
She greets me with a wan smile.
You're looking... lean?
Her brow furrows as she takes in my poison-altered appearance. Lya pushes past me, a shriek bursting from her throat. She flings one arm around Red, another around the Commandant's former slave, and takes them down in a heap, laughing and crying at the same time.
Skies! Keenan! Izzy! You're all right! You're alive! Alive, yes.
Izzy throws Red a look.
I don't know about all right. Your friend here set a wicked pace.
Red doesn't respond to her, his gaze fixed on me.
Elias.
Lya catches the glare and stands, clearing her throat.
You know Izzy. And this is Keenan. A friend.
She says, friend, like she's not sure if it's an accurate description.
Keenan, this is...
I know who he is.
Red cuts her off, and I suppress the urge to punch him for doing so. Knocking out her friend within 5 minutes of meeting him, Elias. Bad way to keep the peace.
What I want to understand, Red goes on, is how in the skies you ended up with him. How could you... Why don't we sit down?
Izzy raises her voice and drops next to the fire. I sit beside her, keeping one eye on Keenan, who has taken Lya aside and now speaks to her urgently. I watch his lips. He's telling her that he's coming with her to Koth. It's a terrible idea, and one that I'll have to shoot down. Because if getting Lya and myself safely to Koth is nearly impossible, hiding 4 people is insanity.
Tell me you have something to eat, Elias,
Izzy says under her breath.
Maybe Keenan can live on obsession, but I haven't had a proper meal in weeks.
I offer her the remains of my hair. Sorry, there isn't much left, I say. I can catch you another. I keep my attention on Keenan, half drawing my sim as he gets more and more worked up.
He's not going to hurt her, Izzy says. You can relax.
How do you know?
You should have seen him when he found out she'd left with you.
Izzy takes a bite of the hair and shudders.
I thought he was going to murder someone. Me, actually. Lya gave me her berth on a barge and told me Keenan would find me after 2 weeks. But he got to me a day after I left Sarah. Maybe he had a hunch. I don't know. He calmed down eventually, but I don't think he's even slept since then. Once, he hid me in a safe house in a village and was gone all day looking for information, for anything that could lead us to you. All he could think about was getting to her.
So he's infatuated. Wonderful. I want to ask more questions, like whether Izzy thinks Lya feels the same. But I hold my tongue. Whatever lies between Lya and Keenan cannot matter to me. As I hunt through my pack for more food for Izzy, Lya takes a seat by the fire. Keenan follows. He looks thunderously angry, which I take to be a good sign. Hopefully Lya told him that we're fine and that he can go back to being a rebel.
Keenan will come with us,
Lya says. Damn it.
And Izzy is coming too,
the scholar girl says.
It's what a friend would do, Lya. Besides, it's not as if I have any place else to go.
I don't know if this is the best idea. I temper my words. Just because Keenan is getting hot-headed doesn't mean I have to act like an idiot. Getting 4 people to cough. Keenan snorts. Unsurprisingly, his fist is clenched on his bow, the desire to put an arrow through my throat written all over his face.
Lya and I don't need you. You wanted freedom from the Empire, right? So take it. Get out of the Empire. Leave.
Can't. I take out my throwing knives and begin sharpening them. I made Lyra a promise. A mask who keeps his promises? That I'd like to see. Then take a good long look. Calm, Elias. Listen, I say. I understand you want to help, but taking more people along just complicates.
I'm not some child you'll have to babysit, Marshal,
Keenan snarls.
I tracked you here, didn't I?
Fair enough. How did you track us? I keep my tone civil, but he acts as if I've just threatened devastation upon his unborn children.
This isn't a martial interrogation room, he says. You can't force me to tell you anything.
Lyra sighs.
Keenan.
Don't get your knickers in a bunch. I grin at him. Don't be an ass, Elias. Just professional curiosity. If you tracked us, someone else might track you.
No one followed us,
Keenan says through clenched teeth. Skies. He'll grind them down to nubs if he keeps this up.
And finding you was easy enough,
he continues.
Rebel trackers are as good as any mask. Better.
My skin prickles. Rubbish. A mask can track a lynx through the juts, and such skill is won through a decade of training. No rebel I've heard of can do the same.
Forget all that,
Izzy cuts through the tension.
What are we going to do?
We find a safe place for you, Keenan says. Then Lyra and I will go on to Koff and get Darin out. I keep my eyes on the fire. How are you going to do that?
You don't have to be a murdering mask to know how to break into a prison.
Considering you couldn't break Darin out of Central Prison when he was there, I say, I beg to differ. Koff is about 100 times more difficult to break out of. And you don't know the warden like I do. I nearly say something about the old man's chilling experiments, but I stop myself. Darin is in that monster's hands, and I don't want to frighten Lyra. Keenan turns to Lyra.
How much does he know? About me? About the rebellion?
Lyra shifts uncomfortably.
He knows everything,
she says finally.
And we're not leaving him.
Her face goes grim, and she meets Keenan's gaze.
Elias knows the prison. He can help us get inside. He's done guard duty there. He's a bleeding marshal, Lyra,
Keenan says.
Skies, do you know what they're doing to us right now? Rounding scholars up by the thousands. The thousands! Some are enslaved, but most are killed. Because of one rebellion, the marshals are murdering every scholar they can get their hands on.
I feel sick. Of course they are. Marcus is in charge, and the Commandant hates scholars. The revolution is the perfect excuse for her to exterminate them like she's always wanted. Lyra pales. She looks to Izzy.
It's true,
Izzy whispers.
We heard that the rebels told the scholars who weren't planning on fighting to leave Sarah. But so many didn't. The marshals came for them. They killed everyone. We almost got caught ourselves.
Keenan turns to Lyra.
They've shown the scholars no mercy. And you want to bring one with us? If I didn't know how to get into Koff, it would be one thing. But I can do this, Lyra. I swear it. We don't need a mask. He's not a mask.
Izzy speaks up, and I hide my surprise. Considering the way my mother treated her, she's the last person I expect to defend me. Izzy shrugs at Keenan's incredulous look.
Not anymore, anyway.
She wilts a bit under the dirty look Keenan casts her, and my ire is ignited.
Just because he's not wearing his mask, Keenan says, doesn't mean he's left it behind.
True enough. I find Red's eyes, meeting his fury with cold detachment, one of my mother's most galling tricks. It was the mask in me who killed the soldiers in the tunnels and got us out of the city. I lean forward. And it's the mask in me who will get Lyra to cough so we can get Darin out. She knows that. It's why she set me free instead of escaping with you. If Red's eyes could light a blaze, I'd be halfway to the 10th pit of the hells right now. Part of me is satisfied. Then I catch a glimpse of Lyra's face and feel immediately ashamed. She glances between me and Red, uncertain and anguished. It's pointless to fight, I make myself say. More importantly, it's not up to us. This isn't our mission, Red. I turn to Lyra. Tell me what you want. The grateful look that crosses her face is almost worth the fact that I'm probably going to have to put up with this idiot rebel until the poison kills me.
Can we still make our way north with the help of the tribes if there are four of us? Is it possible?
I stare across the fire and into her dark gold eyes, the way I've tried not to for days. When I do, I remember why I haven't looked. The fire in her, the fervent determination. It speaks to something at my very core, something caged and desperate to be free. A visceral desire for her grips me, and I forget Izzy and Keenan. My arm twinges, sudden and sharp, a reminder of the task at hand. Convincing Afia to hide Lyra and me will be difficult enough, but a rebel, two runaway slaves, and the Empire's most wanted criminal. I'd say it's impossible, but the Commandant trained the word out of me.
You're sure this is what you want?
I search her eyes for doubt, fear, uncertainty. But all I see is that fire. 10 hells.
I am sure.
Then I'll find a way. That night, I visit the Soul Catcher. I find myself walking beside her on a scanty path through the woods of the waiting place. She wears a shift and sandals, and appears untouched by the bite of the autumn air. The trees around us are gnarled and ancient. Translucent figures flit between the trunks. Some are nothing but niveous wisps, while others are more fully formed. At one point, I'm certain I see Tristus, his features contorted in rage. But he's gone a moment later. The figure's whispers are soft, melding into one murmuring rush. Is this it? I ask the Soul Catcher. I thought I had more time. Am I dead?
No.
Her ancient eyes take in my arm. In this world, it is unscarred, unblemished.
The poison advances, but slowly.
Why am I back here? I don't want the seizures to begin again. I don't want her controlling me. I can't stay.
Always so many questions with you, Elias.
She smiles.
In sleep, humans skirt the waiting place and do not enter. But you have a foot in the worlds of the living and the dead. I used that to call you here. Don't worry, Elias. I won't keep you long.
One of the figures in the trees flutters closer, a woman so faded I cannot see her face. She peers through the branches, looks under bushes. Her mouth moves as if she's speaking to herself.
Can you hear her?
The Soul Catcher asks. I try to listen beyond the other ghosts' whispers, but there are too many. I shake my head. And the Soul Catcher's face holds something I can't decipher.
Try again.
I close my eyes this time and focus on the woman. Only the woman.
I can't find... Where? Don't hide, lovey.